So cellulosic ethanol is finally a reality, and this is a very, very exciting moment for the industry. The very first commercial scale plant was built in Crescentino, Italy in 2013, but in the last year alone, four additional plants have come online. Two in the US, the POET DSM plant in Emmitsburg, Iowa, and the Abengoa facility out in Hugoton, Kansas, and then two additional plants down in Brazil, Grão-Bios plant and the Heisen plant. And there's an additional plant in the U.S. that is slated to come online sometime this year. So this is really quite a milestone as far as cellulosic ethanol is concerned. And as you already heard earlier this morning, although there have been some challenges to getting these plants operating up to full capacity, we at Novozymes remain very, very confident that this technology will, in time, reach maturity and become a very significant source of renewable fuel production across the entire globe. So, in the meantime, we've been looking at how we can take all of our significant efforts in research and development and innovation in cellulases and find applications for them. And so one application, which you may already be familiar with, is a product that we released called Spirozyme Achieve, which is the world's first fiber-degrading glucoamylase. And so we were able to access our significant diversity of cellulases that we've been developing over the past 10 years of research and really hone in on the cellulases, the top performing cellulases for use in the corn mash. And what we found was pretty successful. We found that as a yield discovery product, this Spirozyme Achieve can bring a 1 to 2.5% increase in ethanol yield at full scale, and also leads to significant reductions in energy. And the way that this works is that the corn mash is actually something of a matrix of corn fiber. And so with a typical alpha amylase and glucoamylase treatment, the only starch that is released for conversion is unbound or free starch. And so there's another portion of the starch pool that is fiber bound. And so this starch, when you add a cellulase into the mixture that can degrade the fiber network, is also released. And so there's an additional pool of starch that is now available for fermentation. So this Spirozyme product has been very successful for us and has also been very, very profitable for many of our partners that have been using it out in the field. But we've also really been asking ourselves, what are the other parts of the corn kernel that have been previously either underdeveloped or underutilized that could be useful substrates for the production of advanced biofuels? And so two that come forward are both corn oil and corn fiber. And so at this point, the corn oil is typically separated from the DDGs, but the corn fiber is not. And allowing for advances in grain milling and separation technologies are now opening up avenues to be able to utilize this corn fiber, as I'm sure you're going to hear much more from my co-panelists in just a moment. So corn fiber is a very significant source of cellulosic material that qualifies for D3 cellulosic RINs. And as a cellulosic material, it means it's very recalcitrant, much like biomass. And so largely it passes through the ethanol plant through cook and through fermentation and distillation relatively untouched and leaves the plant in the DDGs. But it's a captive feedstock in the sense that it's already being brought to ethanol plants and so therefore represents very low-hanging fruit for the production of cellulosic ethanol. And it's a very significant opportunity because if there were 100% adoption of a cellulosic ethanol process based on corn fiber, if corn fiber represents between 8 and 9% of the kernel by dry weight, that could give us over 1 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol capacity in the U.S. alone. So there's a very significant opportunity here for corn refiners and corn ethanol producers. Corn fiber is a lot like biomass, but in some ways it's actually quite different. And so what I've shown here are some characteristic compositions for both biomass and corn fiber. And this can vary a lot for corn fiber depending on how it's generated, whether it comes from a wet frack or a dry grind process, or at what point in the process it's removed. And for the biomass too, the compositions can also vary a lot according to which substrate you're looking at. But the key takeaway message here is that corn fiber both has much higher quantities of hemicellulose than cellulose, mostly in the form of arabinoxylan, and also that there's a much, much lower portion of lignin in corn fiber. And so this is very significant from an enzymatic hydrolysis point of view, because the enzymes used for hydrolysis are quite sensitive to the phenolic monomers that come from lignin. So this means that corn fiber has a much lower inhibitor burden, is thus easier to hydrolyze. And by the same token, corn fiber also requires a much milder pretreatment than other types of biomass. And this means that that there are fewer inhibitors generated from the burning of sugars. So overall, taken together, this means that corn fiber is a very easily digestible cellulosic substrate. So here you see data for cellulose conversion according by different enzyme dosages. And you'll notice that compared to a acid pretreated corn stover, this pretreated corn fiber is hydrolyzed at 80% conversion over 5 days with a third less enzyme compared to the corn stover. So this means that it's a very easily digestible substrate, and it means that the biomass degradation products that we've developed for the second generation ethanol industry are very, very great candidates already. But given where things stand right now, there's room for even more improvement with our customized solutions that I mentioned earlier. So switching gears now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about a new product that we launched this year for the production of biodiesel, which represents the first ever enzymatic process for the conversion of lipids and fats into biodiesel. So this product is called Aversa, and it gives unprecedented feedstock flexibility to biodiesel producers, which is really quite a huge thing, because for the first time, biodiesel producers have the opportunity to utilize feedstocks that are high in free fatty acid content. And distillers' corn oil, which has between 10 and 12% free fatty acid content, was previously unavailable as a feedstock for biodiesel, but now can be considered as a feedstock for this advanced biofuel. So this is a pretty huge advantage for any biodiesel producer anyway, because it allows them to take control of their feedstock costs. So now that they can utilize different types of feedstocks, even including fatty acid distillates, they can really be more responsive to market conditions and substitute in whatever feedstock gives them the best margin at any given time. In addition, the enzyme process happens at a much lower temperature than the typical acid-catalyzed esterification process. So there's significant energy savings there. And it also uses a lot less methanol, over tenfold less methanol for the enzymatic process. Because you're not using nearly as much sulfuric acid in the process, it's inherently safer. And the glycerin that comes out of this process is already at a much higher grade. With a simple evaporation step, it's a technical grade over 97% pure glycerin product. So that also, too, comes at a higher value. So the way that this enzyme works, after a simple pretreatment step, the enzyme, along with a little bit of water, is mixed in with the lipid, and then it's agitated at high speeds to create a water-in-oil emulsion. So you actually have tiny droplets of water that are suspended in the oil, and the enzyme is active at the interface between the aqueous phase and the oil phase. So the enzyme can either hydrolyze free fatty acids from the glyceride backbone, or it can directly transesterify the glycerides into fatty acid methyl esters. And when the glycerol is liberated, it migrates from the oil phase into the aqueous phase. So over the course of the reaction, the composition of the aqueous phase will become enriched in glycerol. So this is a pretty huge difference compared to the conventional process, which was actually quite water in that process was quite inhibitory and was difficult to avoid. And so it was very, very important to remove as much water from the feedstock as possible. And here we've actually turned that on its head, because the enzyme process is much more forgiving of water. And the entire reaction is actually tunable according to several different process parameters, both agitation speeds, methanol feed rate, and by varying the composition of the aqueous phase. And so here you see some kinetic data from this reaction. And you'll notice that the reaction, the production of fatty acid methyl ester in green, is quite rapid in the initial part of the reaction. But it takes a full 24 hours to really be able to push the reaction to completion. The conditions that are shown here are optimal for single use of enzyme. But some of the partners that we've been working with, as I'll mention in a moment, have actually been exploring recycling the enzyme in the heavy phase after a single batch which is possible, but requires some adjustment of the different reaction parameters in order to get the optimal kinetics for the enzymatic hydrolysis, for the enzymatic reaction. So this is a process schematic for the process. So I mentioned earlier there was a simple pretreatment step, and this is important to neutralize any mineral acids that might be in the oil, which can affect the pH of the aqueous phase once the enzyme is added. It's also important to remove any soaps or phosphates or emulsifiers or any other chemical that you may have in your process, which would negatively impact the enzyme activity. And after pretreatment, the oil, the pretreated oil is put in the enzyme reactor, where it's dosed with enzyme and with methanol. And when the reaction reaches completion, it's very simple to separate out the crude fame product from the heavy phase. This can either be with a simple settling process or can be sped up with the use of centrifuges. The crude fame then passes through a flash dryer to remove the residual methanol before it goes to a final polishing step. So the biodiesel, the crude fame that's produced from the enzymatic reaction, is very, very close to meeting ASTM specifications, but it requires an additional polishing step to remove some of the residual free fatty acid. And there are several different alternatives that are being used, that can be used for this process. And we've been working closely with three different technology partners in particular, Viesel, Blue Sun, and WB Services. And so they have different solutions for this step, and they've all been very fantastic partners for us in developing both the process technology and also the commercialization for this new enzyme process. So in summary, I've told you today about two different enzyme products, two different enzyme innovations that we have, which we believe offer an opportunity to capture some of the significant value that's available for parts of the corn kernel that have previously been underdeveloped or were inaccessible. And we've also been finding applications for cellulases that we've developed for the second generation industry and the first generation industry for both starch and corn fiber. And so we at Novozymes are prepared with these different enzyme solutions to help you achieve whatever your particular process goals may be, whether that's yield or throughput or co-products or whatever it is. And we're very excited to continue to work with you. So I'd like to thank you all for your attention and be happy to take questions in the panel once we get to the end. And if you can't get a chance to ask that question, please feel free to stop by our booth, booth 1021, and ask for me or for anyone else. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. And I'll keep the intros relatively brief so that...